NL versus Manitou County, NL, Jason J. Young for the appellate, Grant J. Mercuzen for the appellate.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, after that remedial action, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Dathan Young, representing the appellants Elizabeth Shiflett and Cassandra Dean. This case is primarily about the interpretation of unambiguous Virginia statutes, which must be strictly construed because they represent lien enforcement remedies which are foreign to the common law. The circuit court erred in three ways. Principally, first, that in finding that a fire efficacious lien existed at the time on January 5th at the return date when no tax return had been filed. Secondly, by ruling that independent of any fire facious lien, statute 8.01507 provided the court authority, even without a lien, to issue an order transferring the property. And lastly, the court erred by finding that the appellants had control of the refund that they had not filed any tax return for on January 5th, 2016. As to the first part, we have to look at the language of 8.01501, which clearly lays out that it's personal estate between the time the sheriff or private process server receives the writ of fire facias and the return date that is the window of opportunity for the lien to attach to a property interest. And it has to be property that the judgment debtor either possesses during that time or is entitled to. Well, when is the taxpayer entitled to a
tax? Is it entitled to or may become entitled to?
It is entitled to or may become entitled to up to the point of the return date. So when you the limit is the return date. So when if the debtor is not entitled to at the time the sheriff receives the writ of fire facias, that's not the end. The may become it goes into the return date.
If they became entitled to it up to the January 5th date.
Yes, Your Honor. And, well, we have to look at the plain language of the statute, just as in this court did earlier this year, I believe it was Manu versus Geico. This court looked to Webster's Dictionary, as well as the Black's Law Dictionary, to say that to entitle means to give a right or legal title to qualify one for something. And looking at Black's Law, an entitlement is an absolute right to a benefit when a legal requirement is met.
I couldn't find any Virginia cases that address this. Are we sort of playing in an open field?
Not entirely, Your Honor, because the Boisseau case that is cited in 1902...
Boisseau dealt with insurance proceeds in an insurance contract. Let me ask a question on the entitled to and qualify for. And I know the bankruptcy cases, which both of you have dealt with, are bankruptcy cases. But under bankruptcy law, am I correct that the tax return becomes property of the tax filer on December 31st? That's sort of the position, bankruptcy courts.
A close reading of Chief Justice Connolly's reasoning in the Sexton case, which is the most thorough analysis, is that an interest in tax overpayment becomes vested in the bankruptcy estate at the end of the tax year. Clearly, the language that she talks, and it's very interesting in that case when she discusses, if we're not in a bankruptcy context, I agree with the U.S. Fifth Circuit cases that talk about, hey, this is a contingent property interest because an interest in overpayment is still contingent to the government's right of offset. So none of the bankruptcy cases discuss 8.01-501 or personal
estate.
Except for one, and really it's the land case, but that's dealing with a wage garnishment and not really on all fours with this matter. So the distinction is, in a bankruptcy estate, you've got contingent interests. They all get pulled in. But the bankruptcy cases are entirely different. Now, a bankruptcy trustee has a right to look at contingent property interests, hold the case open for a matter of time to see if it materializes, becomes a certain or absolute interest or right. And in the bankruptcy cases...
So the bankruptcy courts would go further than Basso went in terms of identifying the nature and the strength of the property interest.
Yes. And what's interesting, in all the bankruptcy cases, the bankruptcy debtor had filed a tax return, usually after the bankruptcy was filed. In the Sexton case, that wasn't entirely clear from that, from the ruling of the court. I would proffer the court, though, I've spoken with the attorney for the bankruptcy debtor, and that was filed after that bankruptcy petition was filed. So, again, we're dealing with a totally different facts scenario. But, yes, they look at an expansive reach of property interests. Why is someone not entitled? Why were these appellants not entitled on January 5th? Well, in order to be entitled, you've got to be able to have a legal recovery. You have some claim you can make. And the United States Supreme Court in the Clintwood Elkhorn case unanimously held that you had to file a tax return, an administrative return, before you have any claim to any tax overpayment. That case was dealing with a different type of tax, but the language in the decision was expansive to say that any type of tax overpayment requires the filing of a return before you can make a claim.
So if that were the rule here, this would be a very narrow opinion from your point of view. We would just say they hadn't filed the return yet, and we don't need to even address what happens if you file a return and you can actually measure with some degree of accuracy what you expect to get back.
This court can issue a limited ruling like that, and that would resolve the fact that there was no lien here on January 5th. That's correct.
Because the principal contingency, filing the return, had never been done.
That's correct. And when the tax return is filed, you're in essence as a taxpayer declaring there's an end to events that create tax for me or that are tax credits. Even after the end of a tax year, a taxpayer can take actions that would increase or decrease their tax liability, whether it's through payments to an IRA contribution or other types of contributions that I cover in my brief.
But does the fact that they can take actions to increase it or decrease it mean that whatever amount is left as of the time they are eligible to file for it, they're not entitled to it? Whatever amount is left once they've paid IRAs, the government has assessed whatever they may have outstanding against them. Why wouldn't they be entitled to the balance?
Well, I think to be entitled, it requires, one, that you file the return, and two, that there actually isn't a tax overpayment. Now, if we just assume that the taxpayer is correct when they make that calculation, meaning the government will be required to make that disbursement, I don't know any taxpayer that knows what they're going to declare they're going to get until they've actually completed the return and filed it. Before they make that decision, I don't think they can even determine for themselves what that would be. But in the Boisseau case, the insurance contract allowed that the insured could pay up the policy and then have a present interest, or at the completion of time, be entitled to benefits. But this court held then that the court could not compel, and the creditor could not compel the debtor to write a new contract, to reform the contract. So likewise, a court cannot compel a taxpayer to make contributions to an IRA.
But wouldn't the analysis be, boss, so I can't force you to write a new contract that you need to pay up your premiums now to be eligible for the payout? Here, what you're saying is that the court can't force the taxpayer to file their tax returns. Is that...
That is correct. And for many low-income taxpayers, they're not required to file a tax return. They may never file a tax return. And what matters is, what was the condition on January 5th? And it wasn't explored in the record below, but I think it's an important consideration, which is, who has W-2s or savings from persons they made contributions to, the charitable contributions, who has that documentation on the 5th of the year to file, to even start to calculate a tax
return? Could the court have said to the taxpayers, my belief is you're entitled to it, I understand you haven't filed it, and if you file it, then you have to pay it to the debtor, to the creditor?
Well, that just acknowledges...
Well, if and when you file it.
But that just acknowledges that there is no entitlement, because if a debt relies on the contingent occurrence of an event that may or may not happen, Boisseau says, guess what? That's not a debt. And likewise, it's somewhat similar in the network solutions case of this court, where the court found for a garnishment scenario, a liability, a contract for services wasn't a liability because it wasn't a debt that was enforceable by civil action. The judgment debtors in these cases, the case at a bar, have no civil action remedy if they have not even filed a tax return. And so there is no debt until they file.
I couldn't find in the record, and I probably just overlooked it. Was this filed with the sheriff?
I believe the writ of fire and facious was given maybe to a private process server in the prior year, November or December.
Does giving it to a private process server satisfy the requirement?
It'd be the same as giving it to the sheriff, Okay. Yes.
Good officer. Why wouldn't it work a little bit like a garnishment? I mean, if you know that at the end of the year there might be money owed to the state by this person because of overpayment of taxes, why can't you have a writ of fife issued and then served on the Commonwealth of Virginia? And if they don't have a tax return, they certainly can't figure out how much money they owe the taxpayer, or whether they owe him anything, and they just have to say zero. I mean, that response would be zero. But then you could send another one back with a return date that might be, you know, say after April 15th. And then if they had money there, they have to return it. But if they didn't, they wouldn't.
Well, if like a garnishment is a longer window, it's about up to 6 months. So yes, I mean there are other methods of collection, you know, creditor process that can be used to pinpoint. If I'm understanding the question right, there's still the issue that also hinges on control there as well. Is has Virginia or has the federal government waived sovereign immunity to give up the control that they have over those interests? Can you garnish the federal government? I haven't seen any waiver of sovereign immunity there. Now, I don't mean to blend the issues of control and entitlement, but I think if there's not a present interest, for the subject matter jurisdiction this court has to look at on the date of this action, what does the authorizing statute say the court may do? I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
May it please the court. I'm Grant Richardson of Bridgewater, Virginia. I'm here on behalf of the appellee. I'd like to begin by analyzing this case with a little allegory. We have a federal government we sometimes call Uncle Sam, and we've given money to our uncle, required by law to give that money. Now, Uncle holds that money in trust for us. He's not allowed to keep it forever. He's only allowed to keep as much as we owe. And the rest is ours. We as taxpayers know it's our money. We're not giving up to him. Do whatever he wants. So when we get ready to file a tax refund application, we know we have money coming back, unless something to the contrary from Uncle Sam tells us we do not. We have a present expectation, ownership interest in money that we gave to our uncle.
Counsel, let me give you an analogy in return from my accountant. My tax return is an offer. And if Uncle either takes my check and doesn't complain that I owe more, or if Uncle returns part of my money to me, that is an acceptance. You're not yet at the offer stage in this particular fact pattern.
Well, if I may expand upon your analogy.
By all means.
Before you tender a check to your uncle, you were required to make payments during the year to uncle. Your payment might be to supplement what you already have paid. The ordinary taxpayer has either had deductions from his paycheck, or he's had quarterly payments made if he's in business, or monthly. So Uncle has your money to an extent already. And the real question is it your money, or is it Uncle's money, or is it both? And I believe the law would make it clear it's your money, except to the extent that your accountant finds that you owe taxes.
And I thought the debate was a timing issue. The question is not whether or not you ultimately can secure a property interest in your return, but at what point in time does that interest become accrued, become truly legally in existence, or is it purely speculative or contingent? So help me out with this. Why is it oversimplistic to say, well, it's contingent because you've got to file your return? And we don't know when you're going to file it. We don't know if you're going to file it. We don't know if it's in your interest to file it. And secondly, it's contingent because you can't even guesstimate what the number is. So at the point in time the FIFA is served, you couldn't sue anybody for anything. If the federal government were capable of being sued for this, you couldn't make a claim for it because it's way premature. It's pre-accrual, it's conditional, and it's way premature. So if the taxpayer couldn't go to the uncle and say, look, we know in 3 or 5 months you're going to have to give me some of this back. I don't know how much. And I have to ask for it. I haven't asked for it yet. But we all know that, right? If the answer is, we don't really know a lot of that, we'll have to wait and see, then it's premature for the taxpayer. It's premature for the FIFA creditor, right?
You assume facts that aren't correct.
Okay.
Case law that has addressed the issue says the ownership vests on December 31 of the prior tax year in the debtor.
Is that outside of the bankruptcy?
That's your bankruptcy case?
The bankruptcy court cites a federal district court as well.
And what's the context of the federal district court?
It was reviewing an appeal from the bankruptcy court.
So it's all bankruptcy law?
Yes.
Outside of bankruptcy law, are you aware of any law that indicates as of December 31st at best?
No. Strictly bankruptcy is the only one I know that has interpreted that issue. But if you want to talk about real facts, and this is the fact, there is a business that exists where people go to tax preparers and they give them money to get an instant refund. And that person who's doing the tax return for instant refund goes into business in January, not March, April, or whenever. They calculate and determine. The taxpayer brings in their W-2s. You may see ads on TV. Come on in now, your W-2 will give you $1,000 to buy a car. There is a calculation process available. And to say that we cannot act upon that vested interest and the taxpayer decides to file a refund application or return is like, what's that silly game you see where pee under a shell? We have to guess when he's going to file that refund application, and if the logic of the other side is correct, be there when it arrives.
And you have to also guess whether or not he's going to get a return.
Yeah.
You don't know. I mean, I guess it's the problem. So do we burden the government or whoever you're going to service FIFA. You got to get the FIFA, you got to serve it, you got to serve it on somebody else when you don't even know whether there's any money there or not.
Yes, but in this particular case, in all the cases that I'm aware of, we ask the taxpayer, are you going to get a refund? And in this case, the appendix shows they said yes. They expect to get a refund. They're not guaranteed. The government's in charge. They are not in charge. But facts are, they know whether they're going to get a refund or not. In this case, they said they did.
Well, but if you say the government's in charge, doesn't 801-507 say it has to be under the control of the debtor? How do you...
We get back to the vested argument again. If it's your property and it's vested in your hands, even though your uncle physically has it, it's your property under your control to tell uncle to give me my money.
The ability to file the tax return is under your control.
Yes.
Whether you get the money is not, or that amount, or what amount, well, is not under your control.
We're presupposing a boogeyman that does not exist. What we need to focus on, is there a refund entitlement? If there is, then it can be levied upon. Now, math calculations, we can't say it's going to be done on January 1 or January 18th or February 18th. I don't think we want to have the law comporting itself saying you have an asset you get to hide from us based upon when you decide to file a return.
Can I ask you about your loaning on expected return analogy? That makes sense to me, but it doesn't close the loop, because of course someone can speculate and buy a contingent interest from someone else and put any number they want to on it, and that's great that they can do that, but that doesn't make the purchase of a contingent interest non-contingent.
Well, again, let me go farther. If you look at the order that was entered in this case to turn over the tax refunds, it says, if you don't get one, tell us, and you don't have to do nothing. Do anything, excuse my English. We're not going to make them produce money that they don't have. But if they do have it, if your uncle does have your money...
Well, that's practical, but I mean, you still have a threshold, which is it's a non-contingent, present existing debt that has some measure of entitlement to it. And the best you have, and interrupt me if I'm wrong on this, is a bankruptcy court series of cases that say it vests for purposes of the trustee being able to cobble together all the contingent interests and then decide what to go after. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me in a bankruptcy context. I don't know how it makes sense here, however.
Well, in the real world, it needs to make sense. If we want to look at the way business is done, real world, people use their tax payments as a bank account. They put it in there as a savings account. It's a bad idea, bad finances, but they do it.
Essentially, you know, they borrow against it. It's secured against the expected return.
Exactly.
But if the expected return doesn't show up, that doesn't mean that the loan that they took out is not valid.
You're right.
So
exactly.
I really don't see how that neither helps nor hurts your argument.
Well, I think one of the concerns the court has is how do we value and when do we value something that can be levied upon. I understand and agree. But we have to go by the law that is available. Bankruptcy court law is available. There is a supremacy clause, I guess, that would say if a federal court interprets federal law, we should follow that. There's nothing to the contrary.
As a practical matter, your analysis of this case would begin and end with the taxpayer, the process server or the sheriff, and the court. It would never implicate the federal government or anyone else. What this judge is saying is you have an expectancy in a tax return if you file within the parameters of the time period under 501 and you get a return, you turn it over to
the creditor. Yes. And I think that's a proper process for the matter is to be dealt with. There is no other process available except for find the pea under the shell. When he files a return and when he gets the check back, if he gets the check back, and hasn't spent it before you got the process server there with a 5A. I don't think the law requires that. If you can identify an asset, and a tax refund is an asset of yours, if you pay $10 million into taxes and the government takes it, and you only owe $100, Do you really expect that the government may or may not give you back money? Well, sure you do. Average person does the same thing. They use the bank account, federal government bank account, and they get back a $10,000 refund. So, I don't think we ought to build up boogeymen to find something different from the real world. And it is an interest that is vested at the end of the tax year. There's no changes after that. It's what it is going to be whenever it's calculated. You're not allowed to say 2015, never mind, I don't want to put that money in. It's in. You're not allowed to say, give it back to me. You can't say, give it back to me until you file a tax return.
Can I ask one last question?
Sure.
Let's assume, arguendo, that it's vested for purposes of bankruptcy law and, for that matter, for purposes of debtor-creditor law.
Yes, sir.
Is it not still contingent? You can have a contingent interest that is vested, but if it's contingent, as I read Bousseau, it's not subject to the creditor's then-present attachment remedy. So vested, non-vested doesn't answer contingent, non-contingent.
It's only contingent upon the debtor's own actions.
Okay.
It's under the control of the debtor. The debtor has a right to file a tax return application on January 1 if he has the information sufficient to do so. Now, he may not have, and we may be again talking about speculation, is when he's going to have enough W-2s or 1099s to file that. I don't think the court ought to speculate like that. Because then we can get into the issue of, well, he got his W-2s on January 30th, so he knows after January 30th he's getting a refund. Or he got all his 1099s on January 30th, and he knows he's going to get a refund. That's not something the court should go down that path. On January 1...
Well, actually, I'm not sure that helps you, that observation, because my reaction to that would be, right, that's why we're not going to give you a 2E at all. It's contingent. There's so many contingencies, we can never figure it out if we spend an hour and a half on every single one of these 5As.
Well, I disagree. Surprise. The statutory law provides that you can file your tax return on January 1. If you can file on January 1 and vest it on December 31st, it is subject to your control. Now, does it mean you're going to file it correct or it's going to may inaccurately state your obligations and liabilities? But that's not what the law says. It says you can file on January 1.
So why don't we make that the contingency? Why don't we say, well, the principal contingency is you've got to file a tax return. That's not here, present, so it's too contingent.
Again, you're making a contingent upon something under the control of the debtor. And we want to say the debtor has control before it can be levied upon. Well, the debtor has control. Now, do we have to make him a reasonable debtor, a debtor who will do what's right and proper, or a debtor who's going to wait to April 15th, or perhaps get an extension into September?
No, we make it a debtor who's filed a tax return prior to the date of the five-phase attachment. And if it has, the principal contingency has been resolved, and we can talk about the valuation. But if that hadn't happened, and it didn't happen here, right? So why isn't that the easy answer to your case? Maybe not all the other cases where they have filed.
It is an easy answer. It's not the correct answer. The correct answer is we don't let a debtor who has control drive the bus. He is controlled as subject to levy by the courts of this Commonwealth. Once you own a Cadillac, the fact that you don't pick it up and take the keys and drive it away doesn't make it not your Cadillac. These people have an entitlement under their control to the refund money. The fact that they don't want to pick it up and drive the Cadillac or file a return doesn't mean it's not available for levy.
In any of the bankruptcy cases, had the debtor not filed? My recollection is that all of the bankruptcy cases which indicate a vested right as of December 31st.
Actually, in one of the cases, they filed amended after finding the refund was much larger than originally. But that's the only one that involved a change of the tax filing.
But all of the others had filed.
Yes.
Mr. Richardson, this is the first time I've ever seen anything like this. And I'm curious, not that it matters one way or the other in the merits of your case. The case originated in the district court, general district court, and it appears to be a form order. It's not an office of the executive secretary form order, but there are blanks to fill in and that sort of thing. Is this a widespread practice?
I'm glad you asked that. It may be a little bit embarrassing, but I prepared that order.
Well, that was going to be my next question. That are you the only person who's getting 5 days on anticipated tax returns?
No. In our area, this practice of the state in the Western District, I started doing this about 40 years ago. Same thing. But other attorneys who do creditor and debtor work in that area, Rockingham, Augusta, Page, Woodstock, Shenandoah, we do that.
Okay. Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I just was curious. I'd never seen it before. Your time has expired. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Judge.
A few quick points. It's not the case in this case that the appellants had admitted that, had stated that they had knew that they were going to get a refund. In the record, pages 13 and 31, there are a couple layers of hearsay where Appellee's counsel says that in the oral interrogatories proceeding that we don't have a record of, there were certain questions asked and answered. We don't have that, and I don't believe that the layers of hearsay there involved are sufficient to show evidence of entitlement in this case. In addition, we should not mix control and entitlement. The ability of the appellants to remove a contingency by filing a return does not equal actual control at the time of an act of a debt that was owed to them. And again, this is our statutes that we have. The court has to strictly construe. Appellees would have the court believe that there has to be a way that this judgment creditor can get these funds. There has to be a way. Well, the statute has to provide a way. If it doesn't, then you have to look at a different method of creditor process. We're just asking the court to go along with the General Assembly's intent that you have to have a lien, and there has to be an entitlement, and then there has to be control in the debtor. And those are the parameters of the statute, and if we're going beyond outside of that, that would be improper. So we ask the court to reverse the circuit court and because there were no lien and no control. Thank you.
Call the next case.